Welcome in the latest episode of Five on the Floor on the Five Reasons Sports Network. Thank you for finding us. You can also find us, if you're not right now, on Dash Radio. That's the Nothing But Net channel, so download the Dash Radio app for free. Search for Nothing But Net, and we're there every day, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Pacific. Also, check out fivereasonsports.com, where it seems like Brady Hawk is pumping out a story every 3 minutes. So make sure you check that out. He's got a couple that actually apply to episodes we're going to be doing this week, including this one. So check out fivereasonsports.com and all the latest on the Dolphins. They went to 3-3 today, shutting out Adam Gase's incompetent New York Jets, with Tua even getting the last series with a couple of completions. So Tua to Patrick Laird is going to be a trivia question someday. Check that out on fivereasonsports.com, as well as the latest on Michael Hill getting canned by the Miami Marlins as the general manager. Also, check out the great sponsors of the Five Reasons Sports Network. We've got a lot of them. One of them we definitely recommend that you check out if you want to make some money is Prize Picks. I did that this weekend. I'm now 2 for 2 playing around with this, and I'm not that good at this stuff. So make sure you check out prizepicks.com. This is the new way to play fantasy sports. It's pretty simple. You pick whether or not a guy is going to go over or under his fantasy projection. So you could have done that in the Bama game last night. Actually, if you'd gone over with all the Bama players, you would have won. Or when NBA season restarts, you could have done, for instance, during the NBA Finals, Jimmy Butler, is going to go over 25 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists. There's a fantasy number that comes from that, and you decide over or under. If you take the over or the under, you can win real cash today. Prize Picks gives you the chance to win 10 times your money for getting 4 predictions correct. Entries are so simple, they've been made in less than 60 seconds. So sign up today at prizepicks.com or on the Prize Picks app and use the code 5, F-I-V-E, to get 100% match on your first deposit up to $100. Again, that's the code 5, F-I-V-E, 100% match on your first deposit up to $100. Prize Picks, truly daily fantasy simplified. And now, today's episode.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
On the floor.
Welcome to Five on the Floor, a daily show on the Miami Heat and the NBA featuring Ethan Skolnick with Alphonse Sidney, Alex Toledo, and Greg Sylvander. Part of the Five Reasons Sports Network.
All right, Ethan Skolnick back on Five on the Floor. Here is today's floor plan. I've got Alex Toledo. I've got Nekias Duncan, who you can read at basketballnews.com. One of the things we're going to do here over the next 2 to 3 weeks, at least until we figure out when the trade season is going to open, when free agency is going to officially open, although it does appear it's going to be before the draft, is we're just going to start breaking down how certain players who could be Heat targets, or at least Heat fans have thrown out there as Heat targets, how they might fit with this current Miami Heat team and how legitimate the possibility would be. So we're going to start today with an old friend, and our guy Brady Hawk wrote about him on the website. He is incredibly unhappy in Philadelphia. That was obvious when he came down here with the Sixers this year. The one thing about Josh Richardson, and you know this, Alex, from having interviewed him a few times, is like, he's always upbeat. He's always in a good mood until he became a Sixer. And he has not been upbeat or in a good mood as a Sixer. In fact, like it was like left to him to try to bring Heat culture. You know, he's a young vet. He's not an old vet. He's a young vet who was supposed to bring Heat culture to Philadelphia. It obviously didn't work out very well.
How was he in that locker room, by the way, when you went to the visiting locker room that one time when Philly was in Miami? Sixers were in Miami.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And so he has not expressed a desire to leave, but he tends to like every Bam Adebayo post on Instagram. I mean, he's not quite in Oladipo stage here or the Beal stage, but clearly he wouldn't mind being back here. So what we're going to go over today is like, is this even a legitimate possibility, and B, would it be a good idea? I'm going to start with you, Alex, because you talked about this on Floor is Yours. You think it would be a good idea?
I mean, yeah, I think, we talked all season about how the guard defense was a problem for them, the point of attack, top of the key, however you want to phrase it. I mean, they ended up going to the zone in the playoffs to try to mitigate what Kemba Walker did, you know, and that was something that we were kind of all worried about going into it, that worked. And I would imagine, like, you know, in another playoff series in the future, they might go to that again. But Josh Richardson would just, I think, be just an amazing fit in regards to the guard defense, right? And then on top of that, you already know what else he can do, right? Like, I think he would be in an optimal role here compared to how he was in his first time in Miami. And, like, him as a secondary playmaker, whether coming off the bench or starting, like, I just think it makes a lot of sense. And I think he would always be playing with versatile, spaced out lineups. You know, he did play in a lot of clogged up Miami offenses over the years. And I think now, like, he would look good in it as well, especially since he, you know, he was still a pretty good player for the Sixers and tended to produce around at the same rate, more or less, despite playing in, you know, an offense like that one that was very clogged up. So I would be very optimistic about him being just a very good two-way player for the Heat and just being able to do a little bit of everything. You could throw him in different lineups, and it really does, I think, plug up a hole really well. And, you know, if a package like Olynyk and Nunn were to get that done, I think that would be a really smart move.
So, Nekias, let's look at it now a little bit deeper. Josh Richardson was cast into a number one scoring role in his last year in Miami, and clearly that did not work. What would his role be? Let's say the deal was Nunn and Olynyk, and I don't know that Philly would have any interest in that, but let's say that was the deal.
They did have interest in Olynyk the first time around when the Jimmy stuff was happening, remember? When you guys were reporting that?
Mm-hmm. So, Nekias, what do you think in terms of, like, how he would fit with this group?
In terms of this group, I think he will be a little bit more in a secondary role, which I think fits him. As you mentioned, when he was kind of the primary guy, it didn't go well because he's just not good enough to be a primary guy. But I do think it helped with his development. His pacing and pick and roll got a little bit better. Really fell in love with the pull-up mid-range jumper. I think that is a playoff shot. That's part of the reason why Jimmy Butler had so much success this postseason. He finally got his jumper back, started knocking down some of those mid-rangers in clutch time. So I think Josh Richardson as a guy that can attack closeouts and get into the in-between range and make some basic passes if the defense collapses, I think that helps quite a bit. It did feel like the Heat were a little bit short on creators once Gorn got hurt. Having a guy that can't shoulder the load but can be a little bit more reliable than a Kendrick Nunn was, than Andre Iguodala was in limited reps. I think having Josh in there and already knowing the system, already knowing some of the pit sets that Miami likes to run, I think that helps. And as Alex mentioned, like on the defensive end, I think it's pretty easy where he fits in. He can defend 1-3. He could be the guy that you can throw on point guards. He did that in Miami while having that number one scoring role anyway. So that shores up basically the biggest weakness of Miami's defense, that point of attack. I think it's a great fit if Miami can find a way to get him.
Would he start with this group? If you're just taking Nunn out, would he start, or would you still start Hero and Robinson?
I think he starts. I think he kind of have to start him. I mean, that's also going to depend on what happens with Jay Crowder. I think there's an option to go smaller if you want to do that. But I think you have to start him just for him being a guy that can defend point guards, because I don't think Miami has a person that can do that right now.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Would you go that small, Alex? That feels really small. Like, guys, are you basically saying you would start Duncan at the four?
I think Jimmy would basically be your four at that point. But
Oh, so you're keeping Hero in the starting lineup?
I think that option exists. I think you can go Hero.
It definitely does.
Yeah, go Hero, Jay Rich, Duncan, Jimmy, Bam.
I mean that switch, is interesting.
Yeah, they switch so much anyway.
That's interesting. That's a way to keep the playmate out. Because I was thinking of it in the, you know, keeping Crowder in, and Hero comes back off the bench with Goran like he did. And I hadn't even considered that. But you can kind of – I could really see it both ways. Like you said, I know that they like to start defense first. It would make sense that Goran stays coming off the bench. But, yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if it just ends up coming down to – between Josh and Tyler. I mean, so how would you feel about them going that small as far as defensively?
I wouldn't mind it, because I think Jimmy is a fine post defender. And on top of that, what he lacks in height, he does have that core strength there, and he has probably the quickest hands on the team. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of room if they do try to post him up. I'm not sure why you would want to go post ups against Miami, but if you do want to post up Jimmy, I mean, he can swipe the ball out, and that's a transition opportunity. I mean, good luck keeping up with those five guys running the floor at that point.
That's true. I mean, it's interesting to me, but it's also a little bit worrisome, because it's like the thing with the Richardson thing to me is really like appealing when you consider him as the guard defender. And I guess you could still run him out there. You know, he doesn't necessarily have to guard small forwards, but mm-hmm. I feel like you're kind of boxed in if you're putting him there, because it's not like, I mean, you're going to be switching smalls onto bigs, and you know, they can do it. And obviously, you know, they'll run a zone if they feel like they have to. But I do like the idea of Richardson starting. I just don't know. I mean, how would you feel about their spacing if it was Richardson starting and Crowder starting, Hero off the bench with Goron?
I think the spacing would be fine. I think the interesting thing about that is if you do bring Josh Richardson in there and that's the cost, not sure if you want to hear this after the run Miami just had, but I think Tyler Hero has shown enough as a creator that bringing Josh Richardson in, especially if you want to start him, that makes it a little easier to let go of Goran if that's a thing, if that's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew that's where you were going. Let's address that a little bit before we go forward, too, because the other thing is Goran and Jay Rich have a really strong relationship also that developed.
And we haven't even mentioned Bam yet, like his relationship, Bam and Derek and their relationship with Josh.
But Derek may not be there too. That's the other thing. But yes, for sure, Bam. But I think we should address the Goron situation because this did kind of break over the weekend. I think Tim Reynolds reported first that there was mutual interest in a contract. Not that that's a surprise, but there's also reports of other interest out there. Not that that's a surprise. Goron is back home right now. Took a picture kind of on his family farm out there and is obviously going to be healing up now for the next couple of months. But that is one of the things to consider. But I can tell you that I spoke to someone close to Jimmy this week who said Goron is going somewhere over Jimmy's dead body. So I think Nikias, it's nice to talk about the permutations of we can play hardball with Goron. You play hardball with Goron, you're playing hardball with Jimmy. And that's, I just don't think that's going
to work. Yeah, I fully expect Goron to be back. I think just his age and now coming off the foot injury and already some of the defensive limitations that he had, I do think it's a little bit worrisome looking down the road a year now. I mean, I would assume that Miami's going to give him a one-year deal that pays him pretty well, and then probably bring him back for a multi-year deal in 2021. That sounds like that's going to be the move there, unless something crazy breaks down in the relationship there. But at a certain point, you kind of have to care about how you defend point guards. Mm-hmm. And as much as Miami switched and kind of alleviated it a little bit, that's something that they're going to have to address. Boston's not going anywhere. We'll see what kind of team, we'll see how Brooklyn builds on the margins there. But I mean, facing a Kyrie Irving in a playoff series, there are some talented guards.
They got so many weapons.
Yeah, they have a lot of weapons. At a certain point, I mean, switching can only go so far.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And we'll get into Goron a little bit more in another episode. But I do remember it was Goron who kind of took Jay Rich under his wing when Jay Rich was a rookie, when Miami was sending Jay Rich to Sioux Falls to run a thousand.
Oh, and the soccer thing too. And now, I mean, if he were to come back, it would fit right in with Jimmy and his obsession with soccer.
Yeah, so they sent him down to Sioux Falls to run 1,000 pick and rolls, and obviously
is KZ doing that?
Because I think they have KZ playing a different position. All right, but let's get back to the possibility of an actual trade here, because if you're going to make a trade, you've got to make it with a team that you basically just took Josh Richardson, gave Josh Richardson to take Jimmy Butler from. Elton Brand is at least for now still in control, though I would watch the Daryl Morey situation, because I heard months ago that he might still be an option in Philly, even though he's turned Philly down once before and it left a bad taste in ownership's mouths from what I heard. But let's just say it's Elton Brand. You just made a trade with Elton Brand and gave him Josh Richardson. Legally, by NBA rules, I checked it out, you can acquire him back again. You can bring him back. But would Elton Brand actually do it? And let's look at it from Philadelphia's perspective, Nikias, start there. Would Nunn and Olynyk and a pick be attractive to Philadelphia to make another trade with their rival from a basketball perspective?
From a basketball perspective, I would say no. I do think Kendrick Nunn is more of what we saw during the regular season more than he was in the bubble. So I do think there's a decent player in there, and Philadelphia definitely needs some shot creation help. And in theory, Kendrick Nunn can provide that. I think throwing in this year's first rounder, the 20th pick, would appeal to them. The top end of this draft isn't great, but it is a pretty deep class, and I think there are going to be a lot of good role players that come out of that class. There are a lot of shooters in this class, so I think giving Boston, I mean, giving Philly a cost control asset in that realm would help. I think Kelly Olynyk is kind of where it gets tough, because while he's serviceable, probably more than serviceable, he's a good player. I don't know if Philly wants to add another big that's making over 10 mil.
What if it's Andre?
And that's kind of what I'm getting to. I think Andre's the other mid-level contract that they have, but I don't think Philly would want him. Like, I don't think Andre Iguodala is more valuable than Kelly Olynyk. So I just don't know how Philly would feel about that.
But let's take it away from the basketball for a second. Andre might have more value in Philadelphia than anywhere but Golden State. I mean, for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, there's good history there. He was a very productive player. He was the face of the franchise for a couple of years. But also, if there's any team that needs, like, a veteran leader to tell other guys on the team how it's got to be, it's that one, right? Like, and
like bully them into what they have to be.
Well, maybe. I mean, now I'm trying to think. Now, with Doc, though, is there any there wouldn't be a relationship.
Hold on. The Doc thing is he either signs guys that he coached or guys that he coached against. And if you remember, the Celtics Sixers played against each other in the playoffs. So I think Iguodala falls into the Doc.
Well, he also saw him. He also saw him a bunch in the West, because
the Clippers and the Warriors.
A bunch. So there is history there. Maybe Andre Iguodala would be interesting to them on the last year of his deal.
Acquiring Iguodala and Dion to save face for the franchise is going to be incredible.
Oh no!
Well, Dion was the key factor in the Lakers winning a championship. But yeah, I mean, I think there might be some value there. None does give them something that they don't really have, though, because, like you said, I mean, isn't he kind of a little bit of better version of Shake Milton in some ways? Like, right? I mean, as a three-point shooter, he's pretty comparable. He's got a little bit more of a mid-range game. Like, he's better than Shake Milton, isn't he?
I want to say yes. I just have to get the last, like, month and a half out of my mind. And I also think Shake Milton is kind of like Josh Richardson. Like, Shake Milton was thrown into a role that he wasn't really ready for either, because Philly just needed somebody to run point guard. And I feel like Shake Milton is more of a guy that can attack a closeout after someone bends a defense more than a guy that's going to get your team into sets. So it's kind of difficult to evaluate what Shake Milton is right now, because he was just thrust into a lead ball handling role on a team with, like, title aspirations. And I don't think that was fair to him either.
It's still funny hearing the title aspirations, knowing the result. Like, I'm never going to get over that.
Yeah, they floundered bad.
Swept in the first round. It's just like, oh my God, so good.
And they might have been swept in the first round even if they had Simmons, to be honest, the way that things were trending. All right, let's get to the next part of this, because we've made such a big deal about the year 2021 and not going into that cap space. So Josh Richardson has a player option, which actually this is a very reasonable contract that the Heat signed with him. He's got $11 million coming up this year and then the following year. So that would take you 21-22 is where he would head after that. With $11 million. Now, that is not like Drew Holiday cutting into your cap for $27 million, but it's still something. Alex, looking at the Heat's cap sheet, would you be concerned in any way about him having that player option, especially because, you have a relationship with the player already, so you may be able to talk to him about opting out and perhaps doing something else with him afterwards, or maybe he gets some more, gets more somewhere else.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're hoping for. And I think kind of like what we mentioned on the Oladipo podcast, everybody knows he would know they're going for Giannis. Like it's the worst kept secret in the league at this point that the Heat are going for Giannis. Everybody's going to go for Giannis, but the Heat are all in, as has been reported. And I just think it's like, well, if he doesn't say, if Giannis is not in, there you go. You got part of your plan B right there is Josh Richardson. And I think, he would be. The thought is if he's willing to work with them financially. And I think that's something that a player might be willing to take a pay cut for, to, play for that type of team. And at that point, you just leave it up to him. But I do think that is a good point to bring up, because we know how important 2021 is in clearing the cap. And honestly, like, I think it's a really, it probably the best contract they signed throughout that period. And now it coming back to, you know, not bite him, but where it's like it coming back in that way, I think would be interesting. But do you think that would be something that ultimately swings them from making a trade like that and giving up a couple guys who they think are actual rotation players and just holding that on either to play them or for a different trade?
Yeah, Nikias, I guess that's the question. Is it worth it? Is Josh Richardson worth cutting if he opts into that? And I don't think he would. But if he opts into that, is he worth cutting $11 million into your cap space in 21?
I would say so, because if Josh Richardson opts in, then he's going to be a, 27-year-old, 28-year-old, 6'6 wing that can defend three positions, create a little bit off the bounce, run pick, a side pick and roll for you, and spot up. Like, there is always going to be a market for Josh Richardson. Like, I don't see an issue with that at all. Like, Josh Richardson is the kind of guy that you make that deal for, because he's either going to opt out and you can bring him back, or, you know, you just have that cap space to go out, go big fish hunting. Or if he opts in, he's a guy that you can trade if you feel like you're going to get a guy, or right. He can be. So I don't see the downside to that part.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're actually seriously considering this. This is not just like a pipe dream that you're throwing out there. They obviously like the player. They didn't want to trade the player. I can tell you that not only, you know, was Chet Kammer enamored with the player, but Alonzo Mourning didn't want this player traded. I know that for sure. When the deal was going on, the possibility with Minnesota, he was kind of pounding the table, don't put Josh in the deal. So there are still big supporters of Josh inside the organization. And I do think that a lot of people felt sorry for Josh. I also can tell you that knowing some people who are familiar with the Philadelphia situation, they were not happy with Josh internally in Philadelphia. They felt like he came with a little of the Heat culture thing went the wrong direction, where he was kind of angry at everything that wasn't being done the way it was in Miami. And the way it was described to me was he was difficult all year, which surprised me if you know Josh's personality. But
yeah, that doesn't
it kind of sounds like Jimmy, right? Like when Jimmy was in situations that didn't meet his standards or people didn't want to win the way he did, he got pissed off. Now, Josh doesn't have Jimmy's mentality, obviously. That was one of the big differences. But Josh was raised in the Heat organization.
Is it just Josh Richardson reacting to a toxic environment? Like, I don't want to be talking shit all the time. That's from what I could tell from all the reports from all season, it seems like that's what was going on. Like a lot of toxicity and, you know, discomfort and maybe just not a very loose locker room. And I think, you know, if guys start getting passive aggressive and all that, I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I'm just thinking through it. Because it just doesn't make sense, like, knowing Josh Richardson, that the fact that he would be like that. And, you know, what does make sense, what does jive, is what you said about the differences between the two, especially because these are things that have been reported from both sides. So I think that does make sense. But him being difficult is just weird. I mean, I think he got put in a tough situation where, you know, we thought it would be an ideal role for him. But at the end of the day, the Simmons and Embiid thing and the lack of playmaking outside of Simmons just – they needed more from him, and he's not really that guy. They didn't have enough people who could, I think, set up the offense. And I don't know. I just think it's a tough position for everybody on that roster. Like, it's just the roster didn't make sense whatsoever. And obviously that's with hindsight, because we all had him, you know, going far. But something's going to have to go there. And those other guys are not tradable. So that's another thing we haven't even mentioned here, is that if they're really looking to get off of money, like, I don't know if Horford's going to be tradable at all. He might be, but I mean, I don't know what you can get, but Richardson is the most tradable one.
He's the most tradable one because you're not trading Harris, and you're probably
and they're not giving up on Simmons or Embiid yet.
They're probably not going to be able to get off Horford's money. Like I said, the word that was used the most about him was difficult, and that's never a word that was used about him in Miami. And so this does, again, feel to me like an environment situation. And so he would certainly welcome a trade back here. So I don't think he would be difficult again here because he wasn't difficult the last time. So anyway, Josh Richardson, check out Brady Hawk's article on our website. We'll promote that with this so you can check out his perspective on it. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about real briefly a couple of sort of the cheaper on-ball defensive options that may be out there. Before we do, I want to tell you about our friend Eric Brown. If you need a realtor who will treat you as a valued client and not just another commission, let me recommend you consult Eric Brown at fivereasonsrealtor.com, the official realtor of the Five Reasons Sports Network. Eric is a real estate professional with several years of experience representing celebrities, executives, and professional athletes, as well as first-time homebuyers. With a Wharton School business education, he's uniquely qualified at identifying property value, negotiating on your behalf, and providing an unmatched level of service. So if you're considering selling or buying a home in South Florida, just want to know what your property is worth in the strong real estate market, contact Eric at 305-967-9089. That's 305-967-9089, or go to fivereasonsrealtor.com. If he can help you, he'll recommend someone who can. Find out what his specialized professional business approach can do for you today. That's Eric Brown at fivereasonsrealtor.com. He'll also talk Heat salary cap with you. We're going to bring him on to do that a little bit with us. And he is the official realtor of the Five Reasons Sports Network. All right, 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left. Alex has given us some of his names. Nikias, give me three on-ball defenders in the NBA who may be available to the Miami Heat who can help with what we perceive to be their biggest defensive problem. Point of attack.
All right. So the Heat, as I guess everyone that listens to the show knows, can create quite a bit of cap space this year. I mean, this offseason, depending on who they denounce and all that good stuff. So De'Anthony Melton from Memphis definitely interests me. 6'4 guy, can defend both guard spots, but he's really a hound against point guards. Javon Carter out in Phoenix, he's a restricted free agent. Not sure how serious Phoenix is going to be about bringing him back, but he's a guy that can really get after point guards. Actually lit Miami up in one of their regular season meetings. Made basically every corner three he took. The jump shot is really the swing skill for him, but he's definitely in that 3-and-D mold, guy that can hound point guards. The other guy I would look at would probably be Gary Payton Jr., Gary Payton the second, or is it the third?
Yeah, I was literally wondering the same thing.
Yeah, I always get mixed up on how that works. But another guy might be the best guard defender in basketball, honestly. He is tremendous. Wow. Can't do anything else, which is the issue with him. But if you just need a guy to go hound a point guard for 12, 15 minutes, like, he's probably the best option on the free agent market.
So hold on. That's a take right there. You call him the best guard defender. I mean, he's probably going to be the cheapest of the three, right? Like, mm-hmm. Isn't he the lowest profile too? Like, if he's that good, like...
Yeah, he's absurd at that skill. But again, he's bounced around the G League and bounced around a couple of benches in the NBA because that's literally all he can do at an NBA level. So that's why he's going to be available. But if we're just talking just that skill, like he
gets so a hand. As far as finishing, shooting, passing, nothing else stands out for him in any way?
Yeah, like he's a fringe NBA player, but that's the skill that's going to keep his name in circles because
that might be a way that they could actually acquire him too. Because something that I was thinking as far as this conversation is like, if they end up giving their money to Goran and Crowder on big 1 year deals, like we're expecting, obviously the avenues to add guys are limited before you get into, you know, creative ways that they can sign guys. They're going to have the mid level once they, you know, go over the cap. And obviously you can go after, you can split it up and go after a couple guys, or if they go after a big, like you have limited money. And if you can get a Gary Payton Jr. for a small chunk of that, like that would actually make sense. Cause I don't know if you can for maybe Melton or Carter, who might get a little bit more money, but I think that factors into this conversation. If you had to rank between, so I know that Payton is your third, but how do you feel between Melton and Carter? Which would be a better fit for this team?
I think Melton is the easy fix. I think he's the easy number one there. He is a little bit younger. He has a little bit more size, and the shot is further along than Carter's is. I think he's just flat out better. It would behoove Memphis to lock Melton up very quickly because those offers are going to come. Like, don't be surprised if he's getting between 8 and 10 mil for like Atlanta.
So that's the thing. You think that he would have to basically pony up the mid-level exception to get a guy like that?
Yes, but I think it's worth it. Like, young guys that can shoot and defend, even in theory, are definitely worth it. And he's way on the plus side defensively.
They look at those guys 2-3 years out too. They've made some plays for that kind of player before, and so that would be an interesting one. Who was the guard before we go here? Who was the guard that they kept giving chances to in the G League over and over and over because supposedly
Rionte Weber?
Thank you. Like seven times they brought him back or something before they finally gave up on him. Like, you know, and that was supposed to be the skill set. So they obviously value the skill set, but he obviously didn't make it. All right. One thing.
Hey, bring him back. Why not?
Well, maybe not. I mean, I know I don't think he was. He didn't he post some stuff on social media the last time that wasn't so positive about the Heat. They won't bring him back now. couple of other things we want to address here real quick. Our guy Greg Sylvander has been reporting about Dan Craig up in Indiana. He is one of the finalists, so that is still a possibility that Dan Craig could go to Indiana. I found it interesting. We talked about Gary Payton the third or second or 12th, that Gary Payton has expressed interest in being an assistant. Gary Payton Sr. I don't know. Maybe that's an option if Dan Craig decides to go.
Should bring him and his son here.
Both of them. Also, I've got a new show coming up tomorrow that's going to be on a new station here, an internet station called OnsideRadio.com, which will actually be launched by the time you go. It's going to be at 10 a.m. I know the timing's not ideal because that's the same time as we're on Dash Radio. It's nothing but Net Channel. But that's going to be a Five Reasons Hour where we will have contributors from Five on the Floor, 3 yards per carry, Five Rings, Kane, Six Ring, and the rest of the network will be on there. So make sure you check that out. I'll be promoting that. And also check out our shirts. We've still got a couple of specials going on there. I'm going to be promoting them on Twitter. We've lowered the prices of some of the shirts on our website. So make sure you check that out. Our next episode, we're going to get, we've talked about guard defenders and Josh Richardson tonight. We're going to get into guard and wing scoring. For instance, could DeMar DeRozan be available to the Heat? We'll get into that on our next episode. Greg Sylvander is going to join us for that one. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Five on the Floor on the Five Regional Sports Network.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
On the floor.